What's going on, everybody? This is Alex for the EOT News Flash with a quick reminder that we are now being sponsored by FlipsideGaming.com. Be sure to check them out for all of your Magic the Gathering needs, and be sure to use promo code EOT News Flash at checkout for 10% off your order. Now let's get to the show. What's up, everybody? This is Alex once again with another episode of the EOT News Flash. This is episode 85. No, 86. 86, Steven. Wow.
Getting on up there.
We are getting on up there. And it's been such a long week, I can't remember renaming the episodes. But yeah, episode 86. Standard is taken hostage by the Scarab God. Ooh.
Yep.
And of course, you've already heard it, but once again, the Spell Piercer himself is in the studio tonight. How are you tonight, Steven?
Doing pretty well.
Excellent, excellent. Playing Magic recently?
Yeah, I've been jamming a lot of Vintage Leagues on Magic Online, trying to get my qualifier points for the upcoming mocks on the 21st.
Very cool, very cool. And now, before we even really dig in, there was something that you actually brought up, is that those qualifier points are actually going away, or they're resetting soon, correct?
Yeah, so after the event on the 21st, they'll basically transition to next year's qualifier points. I don't know how soon it's going to be till you can start accruing those, because I don't think we have a mock schedule for next year yet, but I imagine it'll just be something similar to what we had this year.
Well, there you go.
I just haven't been keeping up with it, nor do I think they've released the Moto schedule.
Well, there you go. Your weekly EOT News Flash PSA. So,
yep.
You heard it here first, and knowing
it's happening. Give you 35 QPs and join me in the standard event next weekend. Next weekend.
There you go. Sweet. If you can play Vintage while doing it, all the better, I think.
No, well, I'm using Vintage to get my QPs, but yeah.
I mean, it's more affordable, at least on Modern.
Yeah. Say what now?
Well, I was going to say, you know, Vintage is at least more affordable than it is in paper, so there's that.
Well, Vintage is cheaper on Magic Online than some Modern decks, which I find hilarious. Or at least the deck I like to play. I play the Perfect Storm, and it's just about 400 ticks.
That's not terrible.
But I just rent it all, so it's pretty good.
That's not terrible. But anyway, we got some cool stuff to talk about tonight. The World Championships took place over this weekend, and despite, I think, 24 of the world's best Magic players sitting in the room, nobody came up with anything cool, which is kind of disappointing. But we'll get to that. And
the blue-black control deck was kind of new.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Yeah, I could see that. But beside that, nobody like broke out with like a cool pirate deck or anything. Anything that I thought was just like, when I think of world championship caliber players, I think of new archetypes blossoming. Anything, you know, off the beaten path, I think that's where you're going to see it. Or at the Pro Tour, maybe they're just keeping this under wraps for a while. But it's just interesting that this is the format we got was far more underwhelming than I thought was expecting it to be.
Well, once we get to it, I'll kind of explain why I think it was kept to the three decks.
Yeah, I agree with the three decks, but still, it's just a little bit disappointing. But like I said, we'll get to that. And then we're going to wrap up the night. We're actually going to dig into the two most recent rule changes. Most recently, the Planeswalker Redirection rule has now been completely changed. And from a couple of weeks ago, when it was revealed that Planeswalkers were now considered legendary as opposed to not legendary, and can now have multiple types of the same Planeswalker in play at the same time, we're going to discuss the ramifications of those and what we're actually going to see moving forward as far as impact on Magic. But let's kick things right off with the World Championship. So like I said, we had 24 of the best Magic players in the world, from America to the Japanese regions, like everybody who won a Pro Tour, qualified on Magic Online, Grand Prix champions, were all here ready to throw down. Yet we only had, and we went to a top four, because that's how you break down from a 20 field to 24. And yet there were only three archetypes in the entire field. So we had energy decks of the teamer and four color varieties, mono red, Ramanop red decks, and blue-black control decks. And Stephen, why don't you break us down a little bit? You know, so first of all, why do you think this is?
So I think for a tournament like Worlds, you want to play pretty conservatively. There was a pretty good explanation that I had heard. I think it was Jerry Thompson on the GAM podcast. He had mentioned that it's very hard to, or well, they can't leverage their skill over their opponent because all the players are going to be on the same playing field.
Yes.
So you're better off playing a deck that is well established and is consistent in and of itself rather than playing something that's a little higher variance like God Pharaoh's Gift. Or I guess the Sultai Energy deck that you saw at the Open, mainly because I think the pros were anticipating Hostage Taker not sticking around on the battlefield for very long. So, I mean, it's kind of apparent with Teemer and Mono Red. Both of those have, you know, deal three damage effects that can easily handle Hostage Taker. So that, I think that's kind of why you didn't actually see a single Hostage Taker in the tournament.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're in the sideboard. I didn't check.
But, I just did a quick search. There was not a single Hostage Taker registered, at least not in this in the standard. They might have shown up in the draft, but not a single Hostage Taker was registered this weekend for standard at the World Championships, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting based on, you know, what we saw at the Open the week prior.
Yeah, which was everywhere.
I think it makes sense because as far as what I've heard from the teams, you know, that were testing, I mean, on Jerry Thompson's podcast, he said that they broke into about like 3 to 5 players, and so you, that's why you have these three archetypes, is because you know, about two teams, or sorry, there were two teams each, there were two teams on each variant, so you had the blue black control players, the mono red, and then you had the Teemer. So whenever you look at like Peach Garden Oath, they did the Teemer without a Scarab God and instead played Confiscation's Coup. So their mana is a little bit better and they're able to you know, play the traditional Teemer plan rather than relying on the Scarab God to steal games from their opponent's creatures. And then also they all played, you know, decks that were good against mono red, or they played mono red.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And mono red definitely, I think, underperformed this weekend. Just by looking at the results of it, there was one outlier in terms of mono red. It was, they, people were calling it Treasure Red, and it was a deck kind of relying on Captain Lannery Storm and Wily Goblin to generate these little pieces of treasure to cheat out the mana curve. So playing Glorybringer maybe a turn or two early, or playing Hazard a turn or two early. Do you see that as a possible way that mono red can go to improve its standing in the metagame right now, or is this more of like a one-off kind of flash in the pan effect, do you think?
So I think it'll just kind of depend on your local metagame. If you have a lot of the Teemer decks, I think being ahead helps you out because you're able to apply more pressure, or you can play more threats. Because the hardest thing for Teemer to deal with out of mono red is whenever they have multiple one drops, or they can just start nailing multiple threats in the same turn.
Yeah.
So I think if mono red's looking to improve its matchup on Teemer, which I don't think mono red has that good of a matchup against Teemer, mainly because you have Whirler Virtuosos to get in the way.
Yeah.
Long Tusk Cubs can become 4/4s and cause problems. And, I mean, even Servant of the Conduit is fine chump blocking after you've played your 4-mana spell in turn 3. So I think mono red might transition to that, but I don't think it's necessary. I think they can just stay the same consistent, you know, I'm going to beat face as fast as possible and just kind of go from there. Because I think it needs to be the spells variety in order to beat the blue-white approach deck, which it also has a bad matchup, but the spells give you a more breathing room in the late game as your top decks are better against, you know, their Settle the Wreckage and Fumigates.
Yeah, most definitely. And like, we didn't see a whole lot of mono red last weekend at the, or not the weekend before last, actually, at the SCG Open, where we basically saw no mono red show up. Well, I mean, not no mono red, but very little mono red. So I definitely think that you're definitely onto something there.
And keep in mind, for week one, they're not going to put your typical decks on the camera because they want you to see the new cards.
Exactly.
So you'll buy them.
Yeah.
So that's why you didn't see.
Don't believe the hype, kids. Don't believe it.
I mean,
don't buy Hostage Taker at $15 a pop.
No, I actually think that card's pretty good.
It is, yeah. Don't buy Scarab God Go, though. That card's too expensive.
I mean, hey, if you want to do well, I think Scarab God's a pretty key component to blue-black.
Yeah, and let's talk about blue-black. So this was kind of the breakout deck of the tournament. You know, we've seen little murmurings of control decks as of late. You know, we saw a little bit of blue-white, blue-white approach. Shota Yasuyoka showed up with Grixis control to this tournament. But the story, the story of the tournament, I think, were these blue-black control decks that people like Joshua Otter Layton, Jerry Thompson, Kevin Chu ended up playing, or Kelvin Chu, which are basically just, it's a Gearhulk and Scarab God deck backed up by a whole bunch of instants and sorceries and Search for Azkanta, which has become probably one of the most talked about cards in these blue decks. So what do you like about these blue-black control decks here, Steven?
So I think it's really interesting that for the majority of this deck, you have to answer things as soon as they're presented. There's no sweeper. There's no real way to, tidy up the board. You don't have your Henny's expertise or anything like that. Mainly because it's not good against Teemer, and it'd only be good against Mono Red.
Exactly.
So it's too high risk, high reward to be putting it in your main deck. So that's why they're doing the more traditional, like Fatal Push. They up to the number of disallows and Essence Scatters, and then they went into Vraska's Contempt to make sure that if they did allow something to stick, they'd, you know, be able to get rid of it on a one-for-one basis later on. So the problematic cards for them would probably be something like a Whirl of Virtuoso. If, you know, they're not able to counter that, you know, they can just dump all, Teemer can just dump all its excess energy into, you know, throwing out a Whirler, but then they also have to hit faster than a Scarab God, because from what Jerry Thompson said, the key against Teemer is just playing Scarab God turn 5
and then just killing them with it.
Yeah, just using their own creatures against them.
Yeah, I can totally get behind that. A couple of the cards that stuck out to me, at least as far as these blue-black decks go, obviously Search for Azkanta is really powerful. Vraska's Contempt, like you mentioned, is a really sweet answer to a lot of the problematic cards. You know, in the mirror, it takes care of Scarab God. In mono-red decks, it takes care of Hazoret, and just makes complete sense. You know, I like seeing, I think it's Essence Extraction, which is the one black-black instant, deal 3, gain 3 to a creature, which is, I think, you know, perfect for the decks that like this, that typically have a hard time of keeping their life total high. But a deck like this, I really don't think can exist outside of a very contained metagame like the World Championship. So this is not something that I would take to FNM or a Star City Games Open or a Grand Prix. Are you kind of in the same camp here, Steven?
Yeah, so it's kind of one of the problems with control in general is you don't know how to tune it for the metagame that you're going to experience at your tournament. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing about Worlds is since they broke into their teams, and some of the players are predictable. Like Shota Yasuoka is most likely always going to play a control deck. So the pros leveraged their previous experience with the other pros, kind of figured out like a potential of what the decks, you know, what they could be on. Like, for instance, I know that Jerry had pegged Peach Garden Oath on Teemer, most likely, and he had gone through the list of the other players, and he had actually, like, written down, this is what we're expecting to see, and, you know, that's how they, that influenced their deck decision.
Yeah.
And I think that's, if it's predictable, yeah, a control deck is great. If it's an unknown meta, a control deck is a little bit riskier. Something like Teemer is just going to be more reliable because it has answers for almost everything.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of the appeals of a tournament like this, where you get to see like the best minds in Magic go against each other, which kind of leads to my, I guess, sort of dissatisfaction with the end result. You know, it's great that Huey Jensen won with Team Energy. That's fantastic. He's a fantastic player. But I would like to think that when you've got such in-depth knowledge of the other players and you've tested with, you know, upwards of, you know, half of the field in some cases, you would get some cases where you might have a really cool deck that they identify, well, you know, Team Energy is a really popular deck, but here's a deck that can beat it consistently that they can just break out with for one weekend and then just put it away forever.
I think that is the blue-black control deck, because the control deck we had before was blue-white approach.
Yeah.
And from what the from what I'd heard from testing from Jerry, he said that it just wasn't good enough and that black provided a better plan. And that curb cut is just ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen a couple of murmurings about playing things from like Esper approach, where you actually get to play the black cards. You do get to play Torrential Gearhulk, or not Gearhulk, but Scarab God. You get to play Duress and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I like that it's a control deck that broke out, but I would have liked to have seen something else, personally.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe at the Pro Tour, which is in a few weeks, we'll definitely see what's gonna change. And I think something will change. And it's especially interesting that after seeing a weekend where that Sultai Energy deck just broke out and was apparently so much better than 4-color or Teemer Energy, to see that deck not even show up. So I wonder if the pros actually just were testing it and realized it wasn't very good, or just wrote it off completely and didn't even bother with it.
It probably depends on how long they had to test with it. Because I know some of the teams were testing, you know, as soon as the spoilers were out. And if you're going through the motions and you're going through all the decks, once you hit up on, you know, the week before, you want to be close to the deck that you're most likely going to play. So that way you can get in more of the like fine-tuned matches, so you can make all those minute decisions that'll help you win the game. Like if you're playing a mono red mirror, like, do I need to kill the guy or throw the shock at their face? You know, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And that totally makes sense, you know, to go so deep into testing and then see one deck have one weekend of a good tournament showing, and then like, well, we can't put all our eggs in one basket because of this one showing. Stick to what you know. But it definitely makes sense by it. So I'm curious to see if these results will have an impact on this weekend. Well, this weekend's Star City Open is modern, so it's not going to matter. But something like the Classic or next week's Star City Open, where we're going to see, you know, what's going to change in Standard. So I'll be curious to see if this tournament result has a major impact on Standard, or if it's just kind of like more like a blip on the radar.
I think you'll see blue-black control kind of go to the wayside, and blue-white's going to pick back up just because you can sometimes get the wins off of double approach. Yeah. And then I think the deck that's really going to pop out here in a bit is the Anoia Procession deck. It's already been doing fairly well on Magic Online, and if you play in a league, you're most likely going to play against it two, maybe three times. It's just running rampant right now, or at least the past couple of days it has been.
Yeah, and is it the black-white version, or is it the Obzon version that's been running around?
So there's a bunch of different versions. You have the traditional black-white, you have Abzan that splashes for Vraska, and then you have the Esper version that uses Jace.
Oh,
and
then, yeah!
Also Champion of Wits. I know Brian Bronduin had posted a video today of him playing Esper, and it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think over on MTG Goldfuss as well, Saffron Album posted his is it, can it work? I think is kind of the idea of the decks of the video series, and he did an Esper variant where it was how many Jaces can we make?
Yeah, whenever I realized that they were playing Jace in the Anoia Procession deck, I laughed pretty hard because I mean, who doesn't want to get four Jaces off of Jace ult?
Yeah. And that's actually a perfect segue into our next topic of discussion here, which is the Legendary Planeswalker rule change. So, have you gotten to play with it yet, Steven, this new change?
To have it make a difference? No, but I've seen Zach Elsick with a Gideon of the Trials, Gideon Ally of Zendikar, and a Gideon Jura on board, or at least an image of it.
I saw a picture that was on Twitter, wasn't it, a couple weeks ago? Yeah. I think the caption was on this week on what the hell have you done, Zach, or something like that.
Yeah.
So
sounds about right.
Yeah. It's like, what have you done, Zach, and why are you just subjecting me to this punishment? So I got to pull it off for the first. Well, I was playing, you know, against my girlfriend. You know, we're still learning Magic, and I finally got to play the Jace that we opened at the pre-release. You know, it's been in the deck that I've been playing with for, I guess, how many weeks now? 3 weeks now? And it's finally shown up. And I'm like, okay, finally. So turn three, I played it. And she looked at it and I was like, well, what the hell does that thing do? And I showed her, and she's like, okay, that makes sense. And I'm like, okay, she's ignoring it. Let's see what we can do.
Okay.
So activating the plus one, super good. And then finally I'm like, okay, I'm going to minus five it, and I'm going to make two more of it. And she's like, what? So I'm like, yeah, it makes two more of itself. Like, that doesn't seem fair. I'm like, it probably isn't, but let's see what happens. And then I plus one those Jaces. I'm like, wow, this is drawing so, like, literally ripping through my deck, where it became an actual problem of, well, I have all these good cards in this hand and this good cards in this hand, and I don't know what to discard. And then those copies made more copies, and those copies, and I just kind of drug the game out just to see what would happen, and it got a little absurd. I was up to 6 Jaces before she said, I'm done. I'm like, okay, that's fair. But outside of goofy tabletop magic, the rule obviously being changed to all planeswalkers are now legendary. And of course, you know, prior to now, we could have legendary creatures of different names. So you have Olivia Voldaren and the new Olivia, whose name I forget all of a sudden.
She's like the war chief or something?
Yeah.
You... One moment, but yeah.
Yeah, the power of the internet.
Thalia, Guardian of Thraven, and yeah. Thalia,
Heretic Cathar. All these different characters can now exist, or always able to exist, at the same time on the same board, despite them being essentially the same character. And Wizards basically decided to, well, let's change it for Planeswalkers now. So we can now have Gideon Jura, Gideon of the Trials, Gideon Ally of Zendikar, and it doesn't matter. They don't legend rule themselves out. And we haven't really seen a major impact of this just yet in any major tournament, except for online. We're seeing the Gideon tribal decks. We've seen Liliana tribal decks. Over on TCG Player, one of their content creators did a Tezzeret tribal deck that got me all kinds of excited. Watching those games was hysterical, even the one where he lost to Burn at the Stake Tokens deck, which was amazing.
Is that the 3 or 5 mana spell that you send creatures and deal 3?
Yeah, I think you like tap creatures. And
you just tap them. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's a Soul Sisters variant that's playing red for like Norn the Wary. And it got to the point where he thought that he'd won the game because he had locked his opponent out with Ensnaring Bridge and was basically just making Thopters over and over and over. And he's like, okay, we'll get to a point where we're going to make a critical mass of Thopters. And despite their life gain off of their Soul Wardens, I will just be able to clock them for like 15 a turn until they die. Yeah. And he was like 2 shots away from killing him. And his opponent is taking forever on his turn. And then finally starts tapping, the mana starts tapping. And he realizes, oh crap, because the creatures are tapping too. Which is what Burn at the Stake requires you to do. And it burns him out for like 70 points of damage. It was insanely funny.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah. but anyway, so now that it's changed, you know, obviously we're not going to see anything this weekend being, I believe it's Charlotte is where the SCG Open is hosting for Modern. We might see some of these tribal decks actually pop up. So Steven, what's kind of your impression of this rules change? You know, it's been a couple of weeks now, but nothing's really happened yet. What's your immediate impression of this rule and what it could mean for Magic down the line, you know, with at least within Standard, which is where I think they're driving this, from my perspective at least?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's for Standard, because I think it was just something that needed to change. Well, okay, I say need. From a flavor perspective, I like this change, because
yes.
It makes sense that you're putting in more mana to a specific Planeswalker, right? So you're basically calling on Jace, hey, look, I need your 3-mana version. Like, I need you to be able to draw me some cards, yada, yada. Okay, no, here, I'm going to put another 4-mana. I'm going to give that to you. Now, help me out with making my opponent's attacking creatures smaller. Okay, now you got that? All right, now I'm going to give you 5-mana, and I want you to mill that guy for 10. And so it's like you put this investment into this Planeswalker, right? And it totally makes sense for, it's like, yeah, okay, you've unlocked more abilities. Why not? So I think it's pretty cool.
That is the most brilliant explanation I've heard of it so far.
Okay.
That's it. The show's over, guys. That's it. That's toot, all toot. We need to hear.
I guess so. But
let's do it again next week. Really we're done. Cool. We're done.
Well, that's the whole idea of the Planeswalker change.
Yeah,
just play them again.
Exactly. And then you cast Time Warp, and you just do it a million more times. It's fantastic. You're out of control. Yeah. No, but that makes so much sense to think about it in that context. So do you see this having a dramatic impact on Standard moving forward? I've heard some people talking about how we're going back to Dominaria and how there is this function of time travel being in play there. So we might see versions of Planeswalkers fighting against former versions of themselves? Maybe? I mean, isn't Teferi from Dominaria?
Oh man, I'm not fully versed in.
We need Justin here for this.
Yeah, we need Justin.
and his encyclopedic knowledge.
So I don't think we'll actually ever get enough planeswalkers in standard for this to make that big of an impact unless they downshifted a couple planeswalkers to rare. But I don't imagine those planeswalkers would be very powerful. I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be cool. But I think the majority of this impact is just going to be in the Eternal formats. Like being able to play Jund with Liliana the Last Hope and Liliana the Veil at the same time is going to be really powerful.
So good.
You could have even, you know, Jace Friend's Prodigy flip him, and you can have one of the other Jaces like Architect of Thought in play, and I think that'd also be pretty powerful. I mean, who doesn't want to give -3, you know, to an attacking creature and then -1 to all the rest? Like, that's pretty great.
I mean, you know, like, even further, have Friend's Prodigy and Mind Sculptor in Vintage. I mean,
or Legacy, yeah.
Or Legacy too.
Place, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a cool rules change. I mean, I remember when the legendary rule changed that you could have each player could have a planeswalker of the same name on their board, which was a massive improvement. I thought, you know, playing Baby Jace to kill their Mind Sculptor always felt like such a feel bad, but then it just turned into like the actual Jace Wars, you know, Architect on Architect, Elspeth on Elspeth. And I think this is a really great natural evolution of what planeswalkers are doing. But I had to ask the question, is there a negative to having this rule in place?
I don't think so, other than the fact that a couple random cards for Legacy just got a million times better. Oh, I guess, and for Commander too. Like, you have Captain Sisse. Two white green, she can tap to search for any legendary permanent. So yes, you can go get your Guy's Cradle, your now planeswalkers, and all your legendary creatures that you were gonna probably go get anyway. And so it you know, boosts those decks up a little bit, but I don't really think they're looking for, you know, the commander changes, or if something gets too broken, they'll go ahead and take her out. But
yeah,
as it stands, I don't think Captain Sisse is overpowered.
No, I mean, that's a commander only card. So I've seen these videos of these Gideon tribal decks that just seem like an absolute nightmare to play against. I mean, I guess it's more of a question of viability. Just even though the rules change, does that make these archetypes that are basically just jamming 13 copies of a planeswalker, is that going to be a viable strategy moving forward, do you think?
I think Gideon's the main one you could do it with, since all of his turn into creatures.
Yep.
I mean, the value you get off Jace is pretty sweet. Because Garruk doesn't have a 3-mana version, I don't think you'd be able to run the line with him. But
pretty sick, I mean, though.
his 4, 5, and 6-mana variants are all pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And I guess if you even wanted to top it off with Apex Predators, ooh, like a 1-of or something, then yeah, you'd go to town further.
Yeah, I'm definitely all in on, after seeing the Tezzeret Tribal videos, I have a modern Tezzeret deck already built, and I've just been having Seeker on the sideboards, like, ah, man, he just wants to play with agents, and now I can go get some Schemers too, and just, the value just seems so good. I can't wait to play it. So much fun. But yeah, I definitely agree. I can't see a downside to this. I just hope we get to a point where this rules change actually has more of an impact beyond Eternal formats, because this feels like something that they want to do for Standard. I mean, with so many, we have the Planeswalker deck versions of Planeswalkers showing up, not really played anywhere, but I think there is a point in time where we will see this have a dramatic impact on Standard. I just don't know how they're going to pull it off, but I'm excited for it.
I think it would probably be whenever the Planeswalker deck has a good Planeswalker in it, you might see both of them. I mean, the Nissa from one or two Planeswalker decks ago.
The Kaladesh one, yeah.
Yeah, made it into the ramp decks from last season. Because I remember a couple people at GP Denver playing that Nissa because it was their answer to Mono Red, because it said gain life on it.
Yeah,
repeatedly.
And I want to say that one also showed up in a Legacy sideboard as well. I think it's some kind of 4-color check pile or some kind of Sultai deck. I forget which one, but it's the Vital Force one, if I'm not mistaken.
So. Oh, no, I'm talking about the Planeswalker deck, the mana one that you like plus gain 3 or 5 or something.
Vital Force is from Kaladesh.
Yeah, it's from Kaladesh. Yeah. It's the 5-mana one that makes 5/5s, what makes your lands 5/5s.
Yeah, but yeah, 5-mana Planeswalkers in Legacy just seems really strange, but hey, whatever works. But of course, you know, with the rules change to planeswalkers like this, it's important that we have a new way to attack them. And again, more easy segues. This is just the easiest full episode of all. So just, was it this week or last week that this rule change actually came about? I think it was this week.
I think it was this week, on Monday or Tuesday or something.
Yeah. And so over on Miracle Rosewater's blogatog on Tumblr, if you dare venture onto that cesspit of the internet.
Whoa, now.
Hey.
It's not that bad.
It's not that.
Well, okay. His blog specifically is not that bad.
Yes,
okay,
his blog is actually very entertaining. The man spends I don't know how many hours of his busy, busy day making magic cards answering people's questions. And some of them are actually very insightful, and some of them are just like, hey, when you drink your one Coke a week, do you cherish the event? He's like, no, man, it's just Coke. Whatever. Anyway, so the changes that has happened also to Planeswalkers that originally, if you wanted to, say, Lightning Bolt your opponent's Gideon, you would say, I'm going to cast a Lightning Bolt, targeting you, and redirect it to Gideon. That's just how these things worked.
But now, here I was hoping they misclicked.
What's that?
Said, here I was hoping they misclicked.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. We can be so lucky. But now, it's simply, you can just target the Planeswalker. Mm-hmm. And that's an easy enough rule change, except they're taking a step further and more brilliantly than I could have possibly imagined. Every card that says, at least up until this point in time, so as with the release of Ixalan, I guess is where they're kind of like drawing the line in this, every card up to this point that reads, deals X damage or targets a player will now basically say to target player or planeswalker. So now Lightning Bolt reads, Lightning Bolt deals 3 damage to target creature, planeswalker, or player, and you know, just different variants of that.
I think they were changing it to deals 3 damage to any target.
All right. Yeah, I think because
encompasses all three.
Everything. So I think it's like on a case by case basis. But mm-hmm. basically, any card that can target a player will also now technically read it in its Orgul text or Planeswalker, which mm-hmm. is super fantastic in terms of just the way to interact with them, and it actually changes up the ways that certain cards in, you know, particularly older formats actually play now. Things like Leyline of Sanctity coming to mind immediately. Steven's pouring one out for Leyline there.
Yeah, slight nerf.
Yeah. So, what's your initial thoughts on this rules change here, Steven?
So I think it's pretty cool. I don't think it was forecasted with Hour of Devastation as far as the card, but mm-hmm. I think it's pretty neat to be able to see the progression of, you know, what spells I think are appropriate to target creatures, what are, you know, supposed to be able to target players. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Open Fire being a 3-mana limited thing that can target, you know, a player or creature, whereas now they could probably make an Open Fire that's 2-mana that's creature or planeswalker, and they'd feel okay doing that for a limited environment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I totally agree with that, actually. I've seen some people that have just like taken it completely out of context and you know, started saying, well, with every card that you cast that's older than, you know, as of now, you need to have, you know, a judge in place to call for rules text. You know, like, what does this card actually say? And I think that they're just overcomplicating things here, because I don't think Wizards is going to go through and pick and choose which ones do say player or planeswalker or just player or just planeswalker. Like, I don't think they're going to go that far. And I mean, do you think the same thing here, Steven?
If they do, I'm sure well, I hope they make it very apparent as to which ones are going to be like that. Because I could kind of see something like Searing Blaze, for instance, being creature and player and not include Planeswalker. But yep. I imagine they just go ahead and say, you know, player or Planeswalker in that.
Yeah.
Because there's really, I think, no reason not to. But flavorfully, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. No, a card that just came into mind that I actually play quite a bit of and I've played it incorrectly before this rules change now, is Electrolyze. I've wanted to go, okay, I'll deal one to you and one to your Liliana, and I'll draw a card. By my understanding, that now actually works, correct?
It depends on what the wording of Electrolyze is, but yeah, most likely it'd be able to work.
Yeah.
If it's deal 2 damage split, however, split between any two targets, then yeah, that'd work.
Yeah, so let's look at that really quickly here.
I don't know, have they done the errata for this? I didn't know when this change was actually being implemented.
I don't think they have just yet. So yeah, Electrolyze deals 2 damage divided as you choose amongst 1 or 2 target creature and or players. Okay. So this would technically read creatures and or players and or planeswalkers.
Yeah,
would be my guess.
They'd probably just simplify it to the any targets again, like split how you choose amongst any 1 or 2 targets.
Yeah. And I can totally get behind that. That makes a lot of sense. A rules change like this, it makes, for one, it just simplifies things. When I was, again, back to, teaching my girlfriend how to play and telling her, and she asked me the very obvious question, well, how do I kill a planeswalker? And I'm like, well, you just attack it. And I explained, this is how you would say that. And she's like, that's so complicated. Why can't I just say, I'm going to attack Jace? I'm like, well, technically that's what you're doing. But in the official rules text, you have to say that you're attacking me with a redirection to Jace. And she's like, that's dumb. I'm like, it absolutely is dumb. And now, many things that she says make me rethink what does and doesn't make sense in Magic. It's fantastic.
Well, I mean, you're getting to experience the new player perspective of Magic, from a veteran perspective, if that makes sense.
Oh, so, it makes 100% sense,
so you have your shortcuts, but she doesn't understand those shortcuts, so it's just something that you're going to have to bring her up to speed on.
Yep.
And in that process, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really make sense now, does it?
Yeah. Yeah, teaching her Modern next. That's going to be an interesting conversation. Well, these 3 lands, when they're in play at the same time, generate 7 mana.
Yeah. Oh, and this one can produce 2, but only for a specific type.
Exactly.
You see this colorless land over here? Well, sometimes it can produce any color, and then you can't counter it, too. Oh, and then this land over here, way over here, you can sack it to draw a card.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
This is either the best idea I've ever had or the worst idea. Or somewhere in between.
Everyone's got to get introduced to the older formats eventually. Yeah.
Maybe worst best idea or best worst idea. I don't know. Well, I'll report back later how that goes. like I said, this is such an intuitive sort of thing, and I'm glad that they're finally instituting it now, when planeswalkers have become not that they haven't been an integral part of the game over the past couple of years, but we're finally getting to the point where we're seeing spells that are directly targeting them. Things like Vraska's Contempt, Hero's Downfall, what else am I missing here?
Our Devastation.
Yeah, our specific card that you mentioned, actually, yeah, that specifically are targeting planeswalkers, and now that we've gotten... Referencing.
Power doesn't target.
Yes, it doesn't, which is so good.
You have protection from red. You won't be dealt the damage, but...
it's such an obvious evolution, much like the legendary rules change has been. Now we have this rules change where it's so obvious as Magic evolves and the cards that we have the access to, the rules need to evolve with it, and this is such an obvious one that I'm kind of surprised it took them. I mean, when did planeswalkers get introduced? How long ago was Lorwyn?
Well, I think the thing with the planeswalkers is they didn't expect them to catch on like they did, or at least that's what I heard, I think, from Mark Rosewater's Tumblr, or
I believe something to that effect, yeah.
But it was just, if they would have known it was going to be that big, they probably would have started at this from the get-go.
Yeah, most
they're just kind of cleaning things up now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just overly to not overly simplify, but just to simplify the rules in general of how these things interact. Because I mean back to the girlfriend example, I show her this planeswalker thing, and it's like, what the hell is that? These are amazing. And your feelings on planeswalkers notwithstanding, I know plenty of people absolutely despise them and don't think they should be part of the game. And I completely disagree with that sentiment because I think they're amazing. And I know, Stephen, that you're kind of in that same camp. I mean, you love a good Jace.
Well, I mean, it's just the more types of cards you have access to, the more solutions you have to the puzzle of reducing your opponent's life to 0, right?
Yeah, and I think this rules change simplifies the ways to interact with them because it's not completely intuitive all the time. And I think rules changes like this are 100% positive, and I can see no downside. Interactions of old cards notwithstanding, who cares about that as far as Wizards concerned? They're more interested.
Commander players care.
Well, Commander's players care, but they are a scary breed of Magic players.
I guess that's one way to put it, but I would say, okay, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy becoming a commander, and when I'm in that headspace, I'm a scary individual. Like, nothing good comes of playing commander with Alex. No, just no.
It's those two-hour long commander games that scare me.
No, it's the six-hour ones with 18 people around one giant table. Why did I ever decide to do that? No. You ever played at G's, did you, Steven?
No, not there, but I did play an 8-player commander game in college that took us 4.5 hours. But it was fine because no one was doing anything super busted like Prophet of Krufix yet, so it's not like someone was actually playing every turn. It was more of a, all right, I'm going to get up, get pizza, let me know if something is happening to my board. Okay, I'll be back in 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Imagine that, but 10 times worse in this game. I mean, everybody was just doing everything. Eventually, it actually devolved into two different games. And like I said, scary breed of Magic players, but you guys are great. Love you guys. Love you, Commander players. Fantastic. It is a ton of fun. I cannot begrudge anyone for playing Commander. It's amazing. Lots of changes to Planeswalkers. I can't imagine that this is the last of the changes to the Planeswalker card type. I expect we'll see something else. Who knows, when maybe another few years. But I truly believe that everything that Wizards is doing to make the game easier to play is just always good. 100%.
Yeah, I agree. And especially with the rollout of MTG Arena, it's going to be really important to reduce the complexities of reduce the complexities of the basic level of the game. But I mean, even then, it's not that basic, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. And when you really think about it, you know, it's for some players, it's hard to look at Magic this way, but Magic is an intellectual property, much like Star Wars or Disney or, you know, any, you know, property you think of. And when you think of these properties, you immediately think of certain characters. You know, I say Star Wars, you think Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, and Rey.
Darth Maul.
Yeah, Darth Maul, yeah. You know, the lesser known, you know, the Dak Fadens of the Magic universe. But they're equally badass. You know, any franchise you say, you think of iconic characters, and these Planeswalkers, that's what these characters are. You know, you don't think of Magic and go, oh, sweet, you guys look like Mundar? Yeah? No. Nothing, that doesn't happen. Or Captain
Sisay.
Well,
there's a good bit in Magic where you thought about a 5-3 beast, so... got a good old swag time.
Those were dark times. I love those times, personally.
Were the right times.
They were. I had Snapcaster and Melee in the format still, so yes, those were the right times.
Unburial rites? Come on, man.
Sphinx's Revelation? Come on.
Right time? Unburial rites?
I was trying to ignore it. Oh, I was gosh, trying to ignore it.
No, I think it went right over your head, actually.
No, I knew where you were going with it. I just chose to ignore it.
Fair enough.
Because I hated that deck so much. But you see what I'm saying here. When you say Magic the Gathering, you think of Jace, you think of Gideon, you think of Chandra. You know, your own feelings of the Gatewatch being what they are, you know, maybe they're too overexposed, I don't know, but they are the cornerstones of the brand, and you put them on the box to sell the cards and so on and so forth and blah, blah, blah. So these are important characters, and you have to have them be prevalent, and you have to have them easy to interact with. And I think to that, these rules changes are positive and always good for games.
Yep. Yeah. And for the small subsection of us who got attached to Garouk, RIP. He is my favorite Planeswalker whenever I first started playing. Like, he's just so cool. He's the guy who was out in nature dealing with beasts. Whatever.
So who was your first Planeswalker, Steven? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. The first Planeswalker I ever cast was Gideon Jura, because I played a red-white humans deck.
Nice.
But as far as the Planeswalkers that I really enjoyed, it was, Garouk Caller of Beasts, the 5-mana one. Like, I thought he was really cool.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't particularly good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't remember which one I got first, but it was either a promo copy of Liliana Vess or a Jace Beleren. Okay. And I had those both in my blue-black Infect control deck that I, you know.
What?
Young Magic player Alex was not the best deck builder in the world. We've come a long way since then.
No, this sounds like a lot of fun. Please go on.
Okay, so a quick aside, and the deck finally actually turned into something very, very good. Like, this deck was just full of, like, Corrupted Resolve, Phyrexian Crusader, and then Jace and some mana links. But eventually, Blue-Black Infect Control, my favorite deck I ever built, was basically 4 Phyrexian Crusader, 2 Scythrix the Blight Dragon, and then 4 Inkmoth Nexus. Those were the kill conditions. And Snapcaster Mage, 4 of. And my favorite, and this is turning into a giant aside, and I do apologize, but this deck was amazing. The crux of the deck was Virulent Wound, which is a single black mana instant to put a -1/-1 counter on a target creature. If that creature dies this turn, target its controller gets a poison counter. And at that time I was playing, everybody and their mother was playing Birds of Paradise decks at my local game store. And I took advantage of that. So I'd go, Darkslake Shores, pass. And they're like, what, no Ponder, no Predator? I'm like, no. And they go, okay, cool. Birds of Paradise? I'm like, great. Virulent Wound. And it's dead. I untap, I play the island, I pass. And they're like, something else. I'm like, okay, Corrupted Resolve. Now it's, you know, counterspell if your opponent has a poison counter. And that was the deck. And, you know, like, Liliana of the Veil was in there too when she got printed. I mean, this deck was just, it was disgusting. And it was amazing.
Sounds infectious.
That was so much fun. Snapcaster and Phyrexian Crusader, I imagine, would fly into battle on the back of Scythrix.
I don't ever want to see that.
Oh, man.
Maybe in a movie, sure, but...
Yeah, oh, the magic...
They have a long ways to go on the magic.
The magic movie. Let's make that be... I will write the screenplay for this.
All right.
Okay. Old bad decks aside... I think that wraps up for this week. I can't believe we stretched that much into this, that much content into this mess, which is fantastic. This is how we do things around here. That's just the way we do it. We just keep doing it again and again. Next week, we're going to talk about Modern, because of course all eyes are on Modern this weekend for the Star City Games Open. I believe, again, is in Charlotte. We're going to see, you know, what's become of the format, because it hasn't really been touched at least on a big spotlight put on it in the past couple of weeks, almost months now, actually. So we'll see, are the Gideon tribal decks growing up? You know, is anything going to break out of that? Is there a card from Ixalan going to show up? Probably not. I mean, maybe Opt. But yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to turn into. And also, we have the Modern Pro Tour coming back next year. So it's time to start looking at Modern again, and I'm super excited for that.
Right on.
So.
Should be pretty fun.
Oh, yeah.
Read on the metagame. I'm going to be prepared for OKC, and then also the Star City Games Regionals coming up on the 4th.
Yeah, so. I'm so bummed I can't make OKC this year. I'm really mad, but I have plans for next year, but that's...
Right on.
That's beside the point. Anyway, so, big thanks to Seaman for joining us tonight. The Spellpiercer himself. You can find him over on Twitch and most other social medias at SSpellpierce. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. I apologize, I haven't been streaming a lot recently. But I'm going to start working on Twitter some, seeing as that's what the majority of the Magic community does.
Yeah, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. And you can also find everything EOT Newsflash on Facebook, on Twitch, on Twitter. Just look for the EOT Newsflash and you will find some semblance of us anywhere. And of course, you can watch all of previous videos over on YouTube and check us out every week, of course, on the mtgcast.com. So... Chris Van Meter was here last week, and he carried on your legacy, Steven.
I was pretty excited.
Yeah, that was an epic moment for the show, and I could not be more proud. So I'm hereby returning it to you.
All right.
The final word is yours.
Let's do it again.
Thanks for watching tonight, guys. Have a great week.